Dudes and dudettes, welcome back to The Anxious Truth. This is episode number 140. Today we're going to cover a thing that I think I have been lax in covering for way too long, so we're going to get to it today, and that is this. We are never learning how to float, accept, and surrender in the face of abuse or in abusive relationships. And I have come to realize that the things that we talk about here on the podcast, that are things that I write about in my books, things that we talk about in the social media community, floating, accepting, facing, surrendering, all that stuff. These are the ways that we learn how to deal with irrational fear, right? Fear that is real, but that actually doesn't have a basis underneath it. This is how we learn to deal with these things. This is how we address our anxiety disorders. And yes, these skills that we learn in addressing our anxiety disorders can come in handy in a lot of different parts of life. However, not every part of life calls for floating, accepting, surrendering, and like being non-reactive. That's just a misconception. That is not true. And it is especially not true in the case of abuse and abusive relationships. We are never learning. I am never trying to teach you how to float and accept and surrender in the face of an abuser or somebody who is or has been abusing you, where actual harm is either being done to you or has been done to you. We're never talking about that, right? So I have today with me a guest. You guys haven't seen him on the podcast in a long time. He is the host of and creator of It's Not You, It's Your Trauma. It's a great podcast. My buddy Joe Ryan, and you can find Joe at joeryan.com. So I'm going to bring Joe on in a minute, and we're going to talk about this because Joe has a lot of experience in this area, and I know he's going to have a lot to add. Before we get started, I'm going to give you the quick version of this. If you are looking for more help with your anxiety problem than just the podcast can offer, consider the book that I wrote. It is called The Anxious Truth, A Step-by-Step Guide to Understanding and Overcoming Panic, Anxiety, and Agoraphobia. You can find it on my website at theanxioustruth.com/recoveryguide. It is a step-by-step guide to doing that, 70,000 words, 400 printed pages, like taking a course in recovering from your anxiety disorder. So if you're looking for more help than you can get from just the podcast, go check it out. Hopefully it will help you. And if you are reading it and loving it, digging it, maybe take some time and write me a review on Amazon. I would appreciate that. So let's get on with it. We're going to talk to Joe Ryan today, We're going to talk about the fact that we never float, accept, and surrender through abuse and abusive relationships. So let's get Joe on here in a minute, and then I'll see you guys after the interview, and we'll wrap it up. Joe Ryan, what up, brother?
Hey, Drew, how are you?
Joe's got a fancy, if you guys are not watching the video, Joe's got this fancy new brick background, man. It looks like stand-up night at Caroline's.
Yeah, man.
open mic night.
I need a blazer, a stool, and a glass of water.
A blazer. And I'm in. You need a blazer, a t-shirt, and suspenders. Like the hack Jerry.
Looks like something out of a bad 80s comedy Gallagher thing.
Right, exactly. That risk management stuff you wrote for me is gold, Jerry. Gold.
They're men with suits, Jerry.
Anyway, Kenny Banya, we are going to tell you, guys, thanks for coming along, and Joe, thanks for coming. You guys, and I let you guys know, go joeryan.com. You got to listen to Joe's podcast. It's freaking awesome. We are talking about this misconception that I think a lot of people have that listen to me all the time, and they hear me do the, you know, surrender, non-resistance, acknowledging and non-reactivity and floating and accepting and all that stuff. And they ask, like, how are you supposed to do that with somebody that makes you anxious? I hear this question a lot. How do I do that with somebody that makes me anxious? And the question is, well, why do they make you anxious? And many times it's because there has been an abusive relationship or it's still ongoing. So this person is mentally, emotionally, possibly physically abusive to somebody. There's manipulation going on. There's all the stuff we hear about all the time, gaslighting, the, you know, that sort of stuff. And this person feels like they have to use the tools that I talk about to learn to float through that. Like, I have to find a way to be okay with that. And that's never what we're trying to teach here. We do not accept and float through abuse. That is not what this is for.
No, I mean, there's a difference between abuse, fear and danger, right?
Correct.
So if you're in the abusive relationship, you're in danger.
Actual real harm is being done.
Right, or the fear of the danger that you're in, like it's constant. There's no break from it. So to work on your anxiety when you're in a dangerous situation, I don't really see how that's possible to work on the internal anxiety when you are constantly looking outward not to be abused.
Yeah, yeah, in a way. So like the stuff that I'm always talking about in the podcast and my books and stuff, the basis of all of it is that the fear is real, but it is irrational because there's no danger underneath it. But right. when you're in a situation where somebody is, you know, manipulating you, abusing you mentally, emotionally, or heaven forbid, physically, no, that's actual real harm. That's real danger. We don't float through real danger. We make space from it if we can.
Right. So there's a constant threat and you're constantly on guard from that external threat. So there's, I don't see how you can float through something when there's actual danger in your face.
Right.
Getting that space away from the danger allows you to look internally at what's going on and face that on a more real level. If I'm constantly looking out to not get physically or emotionally abused and I'm constantly in protection mode, there's no possible way my body will allow me to go in and yeah. flow through it because I'm constantly looking outward to be protected.
Yeah, I think there's two things that go on there. Number one, you're right. If you're constantly just trying to find a way to get through the next 2 hours with your abuser sitting right there or in your life every day, whatever it happens to be, it's really hard to do the work that I talk about, even the work that you talk about, I think, you know, the trauma recovery work. It's hard to do.
It's very difficult. So, you know, my personal experience was I removed myself from abusive relationships, physically, emotional abuse. And no matter where I am in the world, alone, away from that situation, I still have that internal fear. Yeah. I'm not in danger, but if I'm here, if I'm in Wyoming, or if I'm in, you know, Japan, it's still with me. So I end up taking that physical and emotional abuse that I lived with, that dangerous situation,
yeah.
it lives with inside of me. And that's what I need to work on. And I can't work on that if I'm constantly surrounded by a dangerous situation looking to protect myself.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. So like you can't work on that stuff. And I think people who are dealing with, you know, the disorders that I'm addressing, it's super hard to make progress with your panic disorder, your OCD, your agoraphobia, that sort of stuff, if you are in constant protection mode, because there was real harm in front of you all the time. And I think sometimes people have the misconception that like, yes, you can maybe use some of the tools that I talk about to become better at not overreacting necessarily or going into panic mode, be a little more rational when you have a real problem to solve. Yes, you can do some of that, but we are never using these tools for you to find a way to make it okay for your abuser to stand next to you all the time. It's not right, your job to make it okay. You know, like, how do I get through right. this? How do I make this okay? You don't.
Your job is not to become something that stops the abuse from somebody else.
Yeah.
The only way to stop the abuse from somebody else is to leave.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to sit there, and I did this for years, I've had spun it in my head that if I could be better and I could be more attentive, or I can anticipate somebody's needs and not trigger them and look out for what their triggers are, that I would feel safer. See, I'm just managing their a lack of emotional intelligence, their triggers, and whatever they're going through that makes them an abusive person. I'm trying to change who I am and the way that I go about my life so that the abuse doesn't come back to me. That'll never work. You can't enable people not to abuse you.
Yeah. Or even
you have to leave.
Yeah. The thing that is often described to me is like, well, as soon as I get around this person, my anxiety goes through the roof. I get all panicky and well, okay. I mean, I think let's acknowledge that there's a reason for that happening. That's not panic. I mean, yes, you may have panic disorder and agoraphobia, and you may be on a trigger for panic no matter what, but that's not panic because you're afraid to be in the supermarket. That is the expression of actual fear because there's an abuser standing in front of you. So it's normal that your anxiety would go up. It's normal you would feel uncomfortable. It's normal that you would feel vulnerable. That is not fear, vulnerability, and danger that we would float through, right? So and then people feel that they have to keep it under wraps so they don't rock the boat. Like, how do I make it okay that he's sitting at the table with us at Thanksgiving? Well, wait a minute. How did it become your job to make everybody comfortable? How did that happen?
Well, just as somebody that's been abused, you take personal responsibility for the abuse that you get. You know, if I wasn't this way, if I was more of this, if I was less of that, this wouldn't have triggered this person's abuse. And for me, that started, you know, way before I even had logical thought. So yeah. There's a certain kind of responsibility that you do take on, and you feel it's your job to manage their emotions. Because if I can manage their emotions to keep them in a happy, quiet stable place, then I will be safe. So it's not, I wasn't managing my anxiety and my fear and the and my own internal danger. I was actually trying to manage something externally outside of myself that I have no control of. And that is a losing battle 100% of the time.
Yeah, it sounds like it. So if I'm hearing you correctly, the question I'm really being asked in a way, or at least indirectly, is, hey, Drew, how do I use these tools you teach me to diffuse the situation so I don't get the shit kicked out of me, figuratively, possibly literally, you know? So I need to keep it under wraps. I need to float through this so that I keep it cool. We can't have this getting, the apple cart getting upset because the bad things happen then.
The only thing you can do is try to keep yourself cool and calm and put the focus more on you. So the more focus that I would put on myself and what's making me feel like I'm in danger, what's making me feel unsafe, when I start to pull away all of the, I should be managing somebody else, what I realize is that I can't. And the only way for me to really heal myself is to take myself out of that dangerous situation. And then I could start to look at myself a lot more clearly because I'm so clouded by not getting abused.
Yeah.
Not looking at myself and what my issues are. I know exactly what my abuser's issues are.
Yeah.
I have dissected them for decades. I know the ins and outs of it. I could walk in their shoes better than they could at this point, but it doesn't heal me. It doesn't make me any more safe.
Yeah.
They are going to explode when they're going to explode, no matter what I do.
Yeah, that's a crappy situation to be in. So clearly, and some of the advice recently in my Facebook group has been, we've had discussion like this in the group, right? So some folks who share similar experiences who have been kind enough to come in and help and share those experiences have said things like, well, no, you don't have to float through it like an abused person. Your job is not to float through this. Your job is to create separation and safety distance, right? Which is true, and you're confirming that now, like you had to create distance, but I've seen some people literally say like, well, I tried that, but when I left them, these are family dynamic things, I felt so guilty. So like, and again, my head just wants to explode, like you have been attacked, you have been abused, and if you separate yourself from that abuse, somehow you feel guilty. Now, I'm not blaming anybody for the way they feel, just the dynamics of that relationship is astounding to me, that the person who is abused feels guilty that they are leaving the abuser.
Well, a lot of the message is, you see what you made me do? If you weren't this way, I wouldn't have to do this to you. You brought this upon yourself. Like all those negative words that you've heard year after year, day after day, it makes an imprint. And it's this negative dialogue that kind of runs in the background where you didn't make a mistake. You are a mistake. You didn't do something wrong. You are wrong. And you were the cause of all of this. So if you were just better as a human being and manage them, their emotions better, they wouldn't have had to beat on you. So you do take this responsibility on yourself. The problem becomes when you try to leave. See, it's normal. I grew up in one house. So in a shame-based house, everybody else is wrong that doesn't think the way you do. So you think that's just normal.
Yeah.
So you grow up and this life that I lived is normal. So to be in a toxic environment was normal for me. To leave and pull away and create space, the guilt and the shame of holding up a mirror to the rest of that situation.
Yeah.
Is in a way is more painful than sitting in the abuse, because the abuse is normal. I've learned how to manage it to some degree. What I've never learned how to manage was the guilt and the shame and the fear of the separation, because we're not allowed to be separated. Abusers take hostages and we're a hostage.
Yeah.
So that is normal. What's not normal is leaving, because when I leave, that is a whole nother layer of emotions that I've never had to deal with. And it kept pulling me back. Because it's normal.
Yeah.
I don't like feeling alone and isolated because that made me feel worse, but that's what I needed to do to get out of the abusive relationships.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's multiple layers, and you know, this goes back to a thing that we sometimes comes up on the podcast and you know, in the community around it, when people will say like abuse and trauma, that makes it different. Well, I think it doesn't necessarily make it different. It makes it multidimensional, because if you are somebody who is dealing with this sort of situation that Joe and I are talking about, and you've also developed an anxiety disorder, which is what I'm always talking about, you kind of have to do all of those things. So, but you can't work on any of it if you're going to stay there. Now, look, we could probably do an entire podcast on what it takes to actually leave. And I did one with the Long Island Against Domestic Violence people. We were specifically talking about that sort of domestic violence situation. I mean, the process of disconnecting yourself from that abusive dynamic is not that easy. I understand that. Yeah. It's not just, hey, just pick up and go. That isn't it. I get it. But at least starting with the acknowledgement that, like, okay, probably have to go. Now let me work out how I'm going to do this.
Right. So that is the first step, when you realize that you shouldn't be there anymore. And then it's like an internal process. For me, I start projecting forward of what that separation would look like, what kind of conflict that would cause, what's the easiest way for me to get out of it. You know, what, and obviously if it's a physically abusive situation, you really need to plan ahead. But projecting forward to how I wanted to start living my life and the steps that I needed to take to separate. And again, when those emotions and that guilt and that fear starts to come up, when you start to even think about the shame, lean into those feelings, lean into those emotions, try to identify what they are and where they're coming from, and figure out a way to, you know, float through them.
Yes.
And realize that you will be okay. It's the practice of, see, I can't just get up and leave.
Right.
It's too much. That Band-Aid cannot come right off. I have to slowly pull it off a little at a time and get comfortable with that next little pull.
Yeah.
And before you know it, you'll be at that end of that Band-Aid and you'll be out that door and you'll still look back.
Yeah.
You'll look back after you leave, and that may take a month, a year, 5 years, but it will the intense feelings will slowly subside, and your soul will realize that you did not belong there and that it was abusive and that you deserve so much better.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I would guess that after you're gone, and look, that's a painful process, I'm sure. So you're dealing with whatever you're dealing with, OCD, whatever it is that I'm always addressing. And now you're also dealing with this painful separation and the shame and the embarrassment and the loss that comes along with separating yourself from an abusive dynamic. That's a lot. It's a lot to go through.
But it is. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, but you know, it's, and I'm sure it's super hard work. So I'm definitely not trying to minimize it. It's not a simple solution. Like, just leave and you'll be fine. It's not that at all. But, you know, you can't even begin to do the work. The last discussion that we had, I think somebody, I posted in the group and somebody chimed in and said, my therapist said this. My therapist told me all the mental health work you're doing right now is just going to amount to a Band-Aid if you don't actually get out of this relationship. So this person was told by their therapist, like, all this good work we're doing, you got to get out or it's not going to matter.
It's removing yourself from the situation. Nobody should live in danger in their own home. They should not have to live in that kind of fear. And you could read any book you want, as many as you want, listen to as many podcasts. If you don't start doing the work and leaning into those uncomfortable feelings,
right,
and learning how to sit through them and move forward, it's never going to change.
That's tough. We should clarify that. So I started by saying, even in the intro, we do not float through abuse. And that's true. We're not, Joe isn't saying to float through the abusive situation. You're talking about floating through and learning to accept and experience the feelings that you get when you decide to leave the abusive relationship.
Yes.
Yes. Now, then you could maybe start to use some of these tools, like, wow, this makes me so uncomfortable to think about. It's okay. You could be uncomfortable. It's okay. You can navigate that. Yeah, that's different.
Yeah, that is different, because before I separated, I was just constantly, you know, approval and not getting shamed. And, you know, it was still, again, looking outside of myself. So when I did separate, I still had those feelings and they were very, very intense and debilitating. So my go-to is to avoid. So I'm going to keep myself running. I'm going to keep myself busy. I'm going to keep myself moving, because my nervous system and these feelings are like trying to catch up. And I just want to stay as far ahead of them as I can.
Yeah.
It didn't change anything. Sitting with them and dealing with them became the way for me to start to learn how to float through them. I mean, it's been years of the separation and it still comes up. There's still guilt. There's still remorse. There's still grieving that has to go through. But if I don't sit with it and be okay with them and not fear them as much, it's not going to change. And then I'm going to just slip somebody else in.
Yeah.
And then repeat that pattern all over again. So for me, a lot of this has been separation and, you know, I guess isolation in a sense, because I'm a codependent. So I have all those tendencies where I'm addicted to people, but isolation is my protection.
Right.
So I'm in this bind. So what I did was
productive isolation is the trick, right?
Right. So the middle ground became to be productive in the isolation and learn how to float instead of fear.
Yeah, that makes sense. So look, it's going to, when you start to separate yourself from these situations, because again, I'm never trying to teach you to float and accept through being abused ever. That is not the application here. When you begin to do the work of separating from that dynamic, from those relationships, then you can start to use some of these tools and you're going to confront some hard things. And I think in the end, you know, we could do 10 episodes just on this stuff and the mechanics of each step that I've watched you live through. And Joe, yeah. For those of you who don't know, Joe and I have been friends for many years. So, you know, those mechanics we could talk about all the time if we really wanted to. And by the way, listen to Joe's podcast because he talks about it. He literally will take you through the depths of a lot of those mechanics. It's amazing. But I think, you know, then you can start to use some of those tools. Then they start to come in handy. But like everything else, it comes down to, well, I feel so shameful. Okay, well, I guess I'm going to feel shameful right now because the experience teaches us if I don't hit the panic button because I feel shameful, then I can learn that feeling shameful isn't nice. But number one, my prediction of what that means was exaggerated and for the large part untrue. And the consequence that I imagined of shame isn't also nearly what I thought it would be. Like, oh, I can feel shame for an hour and not burst into flames. Is that what the experience has been for you?
Right.
Or any emotion, loneliness, yeah, a lot of it shame, is shame, whatever, you know, any of it.
All those low-level emotions. But shame for me was brutal because everything's about hiding. So yeah. When you're shameful, you hide. You hide everything from yourself and from others. So sitting alone and trying to differentiate between what I caused and what I was told I caused. See, I just thought I caused everything and I was a defective, broken human being and I was unlovable because I didn't learn how to love myself. And the shame is coming out of hiding, right? And you come out of hiding to yourself. And a lot of that is just fear of seeing who you really are and the truth of you. So for me, it was, I had to go through looking at me as worthless. And why that was my self-perception,
right.
And how that worthlessness caused so much fear. And that fear was just anxiety.
Yeah.
So uncovering the shame and the worthlessness and starting to feel like I had worth and I had value actually diminished some of the fear and the anxiety. I still had to flow through those feelings and sit with them and just be with them. And then having to leave the house. See, I'm not allowed not to be happy. I'm not allowed to be sad. I'm not allowed to have a puss on my face.
Yeah.
So nobody can see that. So if I don't feel 100%, I don't want to leave the house. I don't want humans to see me because that was shameful to me. And that was a fear and that would cause me anxiety.
Right.
So practice for me was going out miserable.
and seeing that, well, look, the world didn't come to an end. I didn't burst into flames and like, I didn't lose all my friends. Like it was still
nobody
fine.
Cared, but nobody, me.
Yeah. Well, that's a hard realization to come to, but also very liberating, I think, in a way, you know?
Absolutely.
So in that case, so then the tools start to converge in a lot of ways and the process of healing that abuse becomes very similar, although not the same, but similar to the process of overcoming the anxiety disorder. Suddenly the reality is never as bad as what you had built it out to be in your head, but you know, it's still not nice.
No, I think, you know, I learned later on about the fear and the exposure work and the floating. For me, it was going back into the pain and the humiliation and the trauma and the abuse. And I kind of stayed there for a long time because that was just, it was too much for me to take them both on at once, I think.
Right.
And then as I alleviated a lot of the past and you get out of a false self and these roles you play, you start to feel that fear so much more intensely. And when you stop beating yourself up for having it, you could pay attention to it in a more healthy way, where now it's kind of like a little bit of both. I go back in time a little bit and I experience and go through the feelings and try to connect the dots. But as I'm doing that, I'm confronting the fear of going to the supermarket at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. But you had to get through some of the, I mean, that foundation had to happen before you could start to do some of the other stuff. And we talk about that. Like the, sometimes you could do it. Some people do one and then the other. Some people do the other and then the other. Some people do it at the same time. It wanes from day to day. That's okay. All the work has to be done. And like how you do it may vary based on your situation, but all the work has to be done. What I want to get back to wrap it up a little bit, because again, we could just branch this into a zillion topics, is when you said, I wasn't allowed. I was told that I was broken. I was told that I was to blame. I wasn't allowed to be happy. Don't have that puss on your face. So you start to see, if you're in this situation where you have asked me, how do I float through the anxiety because of somebody that makes me anxious because of this abusive situation, can you understand that you have literally been like, conditioned to think that is your response. And my response is, how is it your responsibility? Why do you think it's your responsibility to keep it cool when the dude or woman that's doing a number on you is right across the table from you? Well, you've been conditioned to think that it's your responsibility, right? You've been taught. Absolutely. This is on you.
Absolutely. It's just this subconscious that has this belief that hasn't reached your conscious yet. And, you know, and sitting, you know, I realized later on in life that I took an active part in some of the emotionally abusive relationships as I got older, because I realized that that was a comfortable role for me. Yeah. And that kind of kept me a victim and stuck because I was too afraid to deal with the feelings of leaving and dealing with the shame and all that. But you are completely conditioned to believe that you are deserving of what you're getting. You are responsible for bringing it on yourself, and you have no right to stand up for yourself, to set a boundary, and definitely not to leave.
Wow.
You have to sit and take it and take it and take it. And you're just praying and hoping that at some point this person will see you as human and change their ways. And for me, it was, I didn't want to have to do the work, because it was more painful doing the work than it was sitting in the abuse.
Yeah, I get it. It's a big shift to make, but it's a shift that's worth making. And like anything else that we talk about in recovery, be it anxiety recovery, trauma recovery, whatever it is, the work is worth doing. There are benefits at the end. So, you know, the takeaway here, don't ever think that you have to find a way to float through abuse. You can use the tools when you begin to extract yourself from that abuse and when you begin to do the work to become the person that you are entitled to be. That's when you use these tools. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah. And again, you know, back to the beginning, I couldn't do the work in the relationship because I couldn't focus inward because I was terrified of what was surrounding me.
Makes perfect sense, man. Hey, thanks for taking the time to do it. How do we find you?
JoeRyan.com, at Joe Ryan on Instagram, and It's Not You, It's Your Trauma on podcast.
Yeah, if you go to JoeRyan.com, they can find your podcast, right? So
yeah, JoeRyan.com/links gives you everything.
There you go. So what I'll do is, this is episode 140, so if you guys want to find Joe, I'll link him. Just go to theanxioustruth.com/140, and I'll have a link over to Joe. Thanks, brother. Appreciate it.
Thanks, man. This is great.
Yep, as always. Okay, we are back. Back into the studio, which is just me sitting in the same chair that I was before the podcast. Anyway, thanks to Joe for coming by to help us out with that topic. If you guys want to find Joe again, you can get him at JoeRyan.com. That is his website, which will link to his podcast and all the stuff he has on social media. He's worth following. He's a good dude. I will link all of Joe's stuff and my stuff at theanxioustruth.com/140. As always, I'm going to ask, if you're listening on iTunes or someplace that lets you rate or review the podcast, please leave a rating or a review because it helps other people find it. I would appreciate the favor. And I'm going to leave you with the sounds of Afterglow by my buddy Ben Drake. Thank you, Ben, for letting me use the song. You can find Ben at facebook.com/BenDrakeMusic. See you guys in the next podcast episode. Keep moving forward. And this is where your story begins. You got the feeling that you're gonna win. Yeah, you're on your way. It's in the afterglow. It's in the lyrics of the songs we know. It's in these feelings that you never show.